Everybody, welcome to the afternoon session. We're going to start with Gary Simons from SIL International, and the talk is entitled, Could you please silence your phones? The talk is titled, Assessing Digital Language Support as a Factor in Language Vitality.
All right, thank you, Ryan. And there should say there my co-author here too, Abby Thomas. She's been a research assistant with us on the Ethnologue staff and is now in a PhD program at UT Dallas. So this work traces its roots to Andras Karnai's 2013 paper on digital language death. Ethnologue was inspired by this work to want to incorporate digital language vitality into our reporting on the status of the world's languages. And this is a progress report on how far we've gotten in that effort. In the 21st century context of accelerating globalization and technology on the one hand, and the endangerment of non-dominant languages on the other, crossing the digital divide may be essential to the long-term survival of a language. We therefore want to be able to monitor and report what is happening in this regard. First, we need a model for thinking about digital language vitality. Studies of digital adoption typically look at two major components: the access to digital technology that is achieved and the usage that is actually made. For a language, this corresponds to the degree to which the language is supported in various digital technologies and the degree to which users of the language actually use the language in digital communication. Our ultimate aim is to develop a digital language vitality index that will combine the place of a language on two scales, a digital language support scale and a digital language use scale. Digital language support is the easier one, since the raw data are available on web pages that list the languages supported by various digital tools. Data on digital language use are not similarly open or available. Thus, we've begun with the easier one of these two, digital language support. So here's an overview of the presentation. First, I'll describe the methodology that we use to develop a scale for measuring digital language support. Then, I'll show the results of calculating a score on a digital language support scale for every known language. And finally, we'll look at the relationship between digital language support as measured by our digital language support scale and overall language vitality as measured by eKids. In order to periodically monitor and report on levels of digital language support, we require a system that's fully automated. For this, we need a system that will first scrape the names of supported languages from web pages, then map the language names to ISO 6393 codes, and then calculate support scores for each ISO 6393 language. There were two main research challenges involved in trying to do this. First, how do we construct a representative sample of digital tools that support multiple languages? And second, how do we transform the harvested data on languages supported into a digital language support score for each language? We began by identifying six categories of digital language support. At the lowest level is encoding support. That is, does the language have keyboards and fonts? The next level of complexity is, does the language have localized user interfaces? And here we're looking specifically at system-wide or very popularly used tools, the operating systems, the browsers, the messaging platforms. Then next up is surface level processing, where the computer, the software is starting to know something about the language. In this case, the surface level of the language, giving spell checking and stemming, things like that, that work at the word level. Then the next level up, meaning level processing, where the computer is actually starting to figure out what sentences mean and is doing machine translation or something like that. Then next, speech processing, where the software is either doing speech to text or the other way, text to speech. And then finally, putting it all together, we get another category of virtual assistants, where you have Siri or Alexa in your language. So then, our next task was to find the most widely used exemplars in each of these categories. So for each category, we identified the top 10 tools of its kind globally, plus the top 5 tools in each of the 10 most populous countries of the world. And we did the latter in order to ensure that our sample would include major tools that are used outside the English-speaking world. And our reference authority for doing this work on finding the leading systems in the ranks was a site called SimilarWeb.com, which you can spend a long time at that site if you're interested in these kinds of things. Then we added any other tools that were found to support more than 10% of the median number of languages supported by the top tools in the category. So in this way, we've got tools on there that don't make similar web, but support lots of languages. We also wanted to get those in there. So the result, our current sample has 126 digital tools for which we can harvest a list of all the languages that they support. This chart shows how we scored support by category. Each language is scored from 0 to 4 for each of these 6 categories based on the number of tools that support the language. So the second column in the chart shows the total number of tools that were in each category. And then the remaining columns show the number of tools that a language needed to have in order to get a score of 1 or 2 or 3 or 4. Per each of these categories. And we use Jenks optimization on the distributions within each of these sets to find where the natural breaks were. This graph shows the number of languages supported at each level of the 6 categories by the 4 levels of each category. So there's 24 items. I'll be calling them items from now on in the presentation. And they're ordered from the one at the top is the one with the fewest languages that are supported to that degree. The one at the bottom has the most, and they're in order in between that. So at the very top, we see the virtual assistant level 4. There are 6 languages that score that high. That happens to mean there are 6 languages that are supported by at least 7 virtual assistants, is what the previous slide would have told us. The next one down, speech processing at level 4, there's 10 languages that reach that level. That means they're supported by at least 21 tools in the speech processing category. And then going all the way down the bottom two, second from the bottom is localization at level 1. And there's 624 languages that have from 1 to 5 tools that give a user interface in their language. I mean, 1 to 15. That give an interface in their language. And at the very bottom, in coding, there's keyboards. There's at least one keyboard, basically keyboards. 1,562 languages. And you can get the sense here that these are ordered from hard to easy. The ones at the bottom are easy. The ones at the top are hard. So when we saw this result, it occurred to us that this looks an awful lot like a Gutmann scale. A Gutmann scale is a set of items measuring the same underlying trait that are hierarchically ordered by degree of difficulty. And in a Gutmann scale, it means that if you correctly answer something on the scale or you agree with it, in the case of an opinion poll, when you agree with or correctly answer something, a more difficult one on the scale, it means you also can do everything that's easier, or you agree with everything that's less. So that's what a Gutmann scale is. And we knew that this isn't a perfect Gutmann scale, because there are clearly cases where a language might get higher in one level and it's missing something at a lower level or two. However, it sure feels a lot like it is that kind of scale. So we asked ourselves, or asked Google, I should say, is there a statistical method for testing how well a set of items fits this notion of being a hierarchical scale? And indeed there is. We discovered something called Mokin scale analysis. In Mokin scale analysis, the coefficient of scalability, or H, measures how well the items fit into a hierarchical scale. the more exceptions there are of something at a high, getting higher is actually missing things lower. The more that happens, the lower than one the score is going to be. The value for the coefficient ranges from 0 to 1, with anything from 0.3 to 0.4 being considered a weak scale. Anything from 0.4 to 0.5 is a medium strength scale, and anything over 0.5 is considered a strong scale. Well, it turns out that digital language support forms a very strong scale with an H coefficient of 0.898. We can thus use the raw score, that is, the number of items in this, you know, this progression of easier to harder things. How many things does the language score with? That number gives us a raw score of a scale of language support. And that then gives us an estimate of the trait we're trying to measure, which is the degree of language support. We can use the fact that it is such a strong scale to create an even more accurate score. Mokin analysis is based on item response theory, which is a methodology developed for educational testing. It's also used in psychometric testing, but mostly we found educational applications. The way it's described there, the scale measures a single latent trait theta. Any subject S has a scale value for the latent trait, which would then be theta sub S. And any test item I also has a value on the very same scale. And that's known as the difficulty, or delta sub I, of that item. And we'll return to that notion of difficulty a few slides down. But given this whole mechanism that they've built with this item response theory, we can build an adjusted score that counts each correct item not as one, but as the probability that a subject with the same raw score on all the other items on the scale would get a correct response on that item. So that's something that's done in testing to weed out the wild guesses. If someone gets a really hard question right, but otherwise they only get the easy questions right, then the probability they really know that is really low. So this does all the math to figure out what's the probability that person really knew that. And that they won't get one, they'll only get 0.1 or something. So that's what we've done to create adjusted scores for this scale. So once we calculate the digital language support scale for every language, we can plot the distribution. So that's what we're going to see on the next slide. This describes the next slide, so you can look at the slide while I describe it. On the y-axis, vertical axis, we're plotting the adjusted digital language support scale from 0 to 24. On the x-axis, we're plotting the rank of the language in terms of its rank in terms of how supported is it. So 1 is the very highest level, right? The language with the most support is 1. The one with the least is 7,795. But what we've done is convert that to a log scale, and then we flipped it. So the high is on the right, and the low ones are on the left. And what happens when you do this is that a classic diffusion of innovation S-curve emerges, which feels really good because this sounds like a diffusion of innovation problem. Then we assign each language to one of 5 values of digital language support, or 5 levels, which we're calling thriving, vital, ascending, emerging, or still. And that assignment is based on their position on this curve. And we actually use the geometry of the S curve to break into where the levels are. So the midpoint in the curve, the 0.5 or where it's 12, that's the dividing line between the vital and thriving above, the ascending and emerging below. And then it changes from being vital to thriving at the point where the curve bends over at the top, where it becomes more horizontal than vertical. At that point is where we change from the blue category to the purple category. And then we're doing the same thing at the bottom, where we got the emerging left kind of gold colored or something, where it starts being more vertical than horizontal, then we call that the ascending category. And down at the very bottom, the red ones, those are the still category. That's where none of the 126 tools claims to support any one of those languages. There's actually 6,000 dots right there. Because of the logarithmic scale, it allows us to see a pattern. If we plot these linearly, we don't see a pattern. We just see a very, very long flat line that suddenly goes way up at the end. But you're not going to see an S curve if you don't do this logarithmic transformation. Now back to the issue of difficulty. Item response theory uses an item response function for each item to plot the probability that a subject with a given score on the scale will get a correct response on the item. The difficulty of an item is then measured as the score where the probability is 0.5. That is, half of the subjects would get this right and half would get it wrong. When you hit that point on the scale, that's the difficulty of that test item. So the next slide shows us what the item response functions look like for our 24 items. Each of these graphs plots the difficulty of each item. So the x-axis is the total score for the language from 1 to 24. And then the other dimension is the probability that the language would have that based on having that many other items. So you see the very easiest one at the top left, it just immediately shoots up, because that's level one as you have that, so that one just goes straight up. But down the hardest one, the virtual assistant four, you're over 20 before anybody starts to get it. And then you can see the other things are at different levels to the right of how difficult they are before people get them. So we can plot those to get a sense of what does it mean to be in each of these four categories of emerging, ascending, vital, and thriving. So down at the bottom, the encoding, you see that encompasses the first two levels of the encoding category and the first level of localization and the surface processing. Then the ascending level, we're getting the third and fourth levels of encoding and the second and third levels of localization and surface processing. And then the first two levels of meaning processing and speech processing. And then at vital, you can kind of read the rest for yourself, but you see how it's getting, as things get more difficult, the level of support is at a higher level. Finally, we want to look at the relationship between digital language support and overall language vitality. The next two slides use the eGIDS ratings and Ethnologue to plot this relationship. And what we're going to see is that there is a clear trend. The stronger the vitality level, the greater the digital language support. So in this bubble plot, we see the number of languages at each combination of the digital language support level, which is in the vertical dimension, versus the eGIDS level on the horizontal. So with those, at the very left, we've got level 10, the extinct languages, then 9, the dormant languages, going all the way to, at 1, official national languages, 0, the 6 UN international languages. One thing that, you definitely see the pattern, but the higher support is at the right end of the scale. And the adding up the numbers here in the bubbles, we see that 89% of the eGIDS 1 and 0 languages are at the ascending level or higher, whereas for the rest of the languages at eGIDS 2 and lower, only 1.6% are at ascending. And this is essentially the same thing, except now each language is represented by a single point, and we've been able to plot them by the whole scale on the whole 24-point scale. And there we see the interesting thing that one language that was international but was in the blue is at the very top of the blue. And a year from now, it'll probably be in the purple because these things are moving up. And then we had some level two. We had some two languages that are in the blue. And you see, they're at the very bottom. They've just emerged from the green. The level two is the provincial official languages. And this outlier out here at 10 on the very left, dormant language, that's Latin, which is a very digitally active dormant language. So how might digital support relate to long-term vitality? There's been a general consensus that 100% of languages are safe. I mean, that 10% of languages are safe for the long term, 50% are likely to die, and it remains to be seen for the rest. The DLS scale could help us to monitor the progress that languages are making toward becoming safe, since if the information industry is significantly investing in a language, it is probably a good sign that it is safe. Right now, only 53 languages are being identified as in the vital or thriving category on the scale. But note that 659 languages, which is about 10% of the languages, have now reached the second level on the scale of having localized level one. An important caveat is that digital language support may pattern differently for non-dominant languages. Development at the leading edge of the innovation curve is being driven by dominant languages. The monolingual members of these societies need everything they do on their devices to be in their own language. However, the story is different for non-dominant languages. Their speakers are typically multilingual and have learned how to use their devices with user interfaces that are in the dominant language. They may not even want localized user interfaces. Thus, the digital language support scale for those languages could conceivably skip over the localized category. But that's something we haven't really dug into our data yet to see what the data might show there. So in conclusion, growth of digital language support has been rapid. For instance, Google Translate, exactly 10 years ago, supported 41 languages. Today it supports 103. And 10 years ago, we didn't even have the virtual assistants, I don't think. But that category has now come into existence. The digital language support scale holds promise for helping us to monitor the progress languages make toward greater relevance in a digital world. But the current scale is most well elaborated at the higher end. To better monitor threatened languages, we may require more elaboration at the lower end. And we may discover that a slightly different scale is in play for non-dominant languages whose speakers are accustomed to using interfaces in dominant languages. So, thank you for your attention.
So we've got about 7 minutes for questions.
Wonderful work, thank you. It connects with work by others like Claudia Soria and so forth, who are also working on identifying digital language vitality, so to say, or language support is perhaps a better term. If you end up with a scale or with four or five categories where 6,000 of the 7,000 odd languages are in the lowest scale, it would be really interesting to have some measurement for all those languages, especially for the audience of this conference, which are concerned with most of those within that category. So I propose that you look into more virtual support, like having an OLAC entry. Are there any digital resources online at all? Are there archives? Is there transcription translation online? And for a number of smaller languages, colleagues of us here have presented work to provide one of the other levels, but it is not yet findable, available online, but it is done on a little team basis on some local server or laptop. So I think that is where, for this community, the impact of our activities on that scale that you are identifying and which works very well for the upper 600 languages could be elaborated so that we get some meaningful results for the languages that we are working on.
I've actually been talking with Nick Tieberger over the years about this, because he did something like that for Australian languages, and we've dreamed of doing that globally. But I think that that's not on this scale. I think it's a different scale. It's a scale of an index of how well documented is a language, which is something we need. But that's not telling us how vital the language is. That's just telling us how well indexed it, or well documented is, so that people could reclaim the language. That's also something we would really like to do. But our current theory is that's a another scale that would be orthogonal to this one.
You know, it's not just about documentation, but you also have, once you have the localization and input possibilities, then of course you would need a huge research project in order to find out how much that is actually used.
Yeah,
so
that's,
are people twittering or,
right.
or using Facebook on those languages?
Exactly.
And
that's
or not. So, and there you have the vitality directly.
And that's the other. I started by saying we've got two ideas. We need a support scale and a use scale.
Okay.
But the use of the data is not out there. But it's clear, like my colleague Dave Everhart this morning gave a paper of a language that, in terms of digital support, is going to be still because the industry isn't supporting it. But there's vibrant texting going on by the members of that community because they just figure out how to use the letters in front of them and they send messages to each other. So there are cases of fairly vital use in the absence of any industry support. So those are two separate scales, and we haven't been able to find data yet on the other scale.
Thanks, really great work. I'm curious if, I'm sure you're planning to publish this somewhere, like if you're planning to also publish like the lists of tools and so on, and also like per language, which tools support, because I can imagine that a community might, or some speaker might say, hey, you know, what are the tools that are available for my language? Are there plans to put this in the web-based version of the epilogue at some point?
Actually in 2 weeks' time I'm having a retreat, a strategy planning retreat on the future of the epilogue. We're going to start figuring out how we're going to do this. So we do have a thing behind the scenes to allow us to see what we've got, where we have exactly
right.
that, where
yeah,
you
yeah.
click on lines and it shows you all the tools
yeah.
available. So yes. Matter of figuring out how what we will do that.
So I mean, there's an issue with the granularity. So using ISO 639.3 as opposed to Quadlog, right? So Quadlog has more granularity. And for Australian languages, the Institute of Aboriginal Studies has something like 1,200 items, where Quadlog and ISO 639.3 have around 300 for Australian languages.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, the scale would look quite different. You'd have a lot more at the bottom of the scale with that like, granularity of the under-resourced languages as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Got about 2 minutes.
I guess I'll ask another question. But like at some point, like you mentioned, like how you know if there's like for example 21 like you know encoding things, it gets into like some specific scale, right? At some point, it doesn't necessarily make sense to have like you know 5 keyboards for a given language, right? Like if you know the community has built their own keyboard app and everybody in the community uses it, that need is kind of satisfied. But now I also see that like it makes sense to track you know where you know are the larger tool ecosystems moving and so on. Right? But I wonder if it's like putting a bit of a heavy penalty. Like, do we need 20 keyboards for some of these languages, right? Like, I wonder if.
Right. Well, that does relate to my final comments about we have a suspicion that there's actually a different scale that's
mm-hmm.
probably going to be in play for the non-dominant languages. But yeah, that would be a consideration in that. But, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.